is the home of Jerry's Percentages.
You're all pigeons. Filthy, filthy pigeons.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, the O-Dog will be back in a minute. He'll be dragging Bob McKenzie and James Duthie along for the ride. We're going to try to spark a podcast fight if we can.
I've listened to both of them. They're both just unique in their own way.
The Rubber Boots podcast.
That one's off the walls because Puffy's involved.
That's Duthie.
Yeah.
And then the Bobcast is McKenzie.
Yeah. And Bob is, he's more relaxed in it. It's pretty cool.
I'll go car salesman and basically just say, what do I have to do today to put you into a full-out podcast brawl?
Yeah.
We'll try to spark something at 6:20.
Exactly. Let's do it.
And we'll look back on the two games last night. Only one game tonight in the NHL. Ottawa, New York, and I was watching, I think it was SportsCenter today. It might have been the That's Hockey Loop, but Guy Boucher was continuing to talk about his team as if they're the worst team on earth and how it's shocking that they're still in the series. And if everyone doesn't play the greatest game they've ever played in their lives, they've got no shot. Like, yeah. Does he realize they're up 2-1 in the series and but New York, they're just humans playing the game as well?
But you said yesterday it felt like it was 2-2 in that series.
I hear you, but he's so...
I know, he's animated. I love AV the other night, and Aline Vigneault in his comments afterwards, he said, I'm not really a talker. He goes, I'll let the other guy do. He likes to talk, which is true. Guy Boucher is, he's very well-spoken. He will give you an elaborate answer. He gives you some off-the-cuff stuff, so it's good for media and fan, I guess, fan base.
Listen, I like him. I think he's a very good coach. Yep. He's been good to us. He's been on the show before. My point is, he keeps trying to drive home.
He's selling the underdog.
Wow, I can't believe we're such underdogs. This is so incredible. It's impossible to beat New York, but somehow we got to find a way.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if at some point that's going to fall on deaf ears if the players aren't like, can you give us like an ounce of respect here? We're up 2-1 in the series, and you're treating it like we're...
Yeah, I think he's probably one of those
David
guys.
Versus Goliath.
He could be probably a 3 to 5 year coach where he's so hard on the guys and kind of like the Daryl Sutter, Ken Hitchcock, where every game is a game 7. You've got to treat it like that. And they play playoff hockey. They need a better game. They were terrible last game, top to bottom. And the Rangers were really good.
And he did say that in the clip, that he can't remember the last time they played a really bad game.
Yeah.
Ottawa's been very consistent. They had to go through a lot to get to the finish line. And they won a lot of games down the stretch that I didn't think they were going to win.
No.
Went into Boston and won.
They had the same schedule as the Leafs.
They had five games in their final 7 nights, and they won a bunch of those games. Yeah, no, I've got a lot of time for what Ottawa's done, but I think Guy Boucher needs to maybe lay off the idea that this is such an impossible feat, because at this point they're humming along pretty well. They're up 2-1, and even if they lose tonight, they're still in the driver's seat for the most part. 2-2, and you got home ice.
What about, I mean, is that series the least one you watch now?
It is. For whatever reason, that series is the least compelling for me. I don't know why. I don't know what it is, because I love Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
I love him. I love watching him play. But there's something about that series. Like, I would rank it probably Pens Caps 1.
Right.
Just because of the history and now with the Crosby stuff. And I want to see if Washington can avoid the choke label,
right?
That has been self-inflicted for a long time. And believe me, if they can't close on Pittsburgh without Crosby, Letang,
right,
Murray, Sheary, they deserve every single letter.
If they lose
in the word
five,
choke,
if they lose in five, it's
you choked.
Yeah.
You choked, absolutely. So that's captivating for me. The Anaheim Edmonton series has been unbelievable entertainment value.
Yep.
And when you can grant me a series that features McDavid, I'm watching every single day of the week.
Agreed.
And then I would honestly say Preds Blues, even though it's 2-3-1. No, I know it's 3-1, but I'm saying it's two markets that, that don't get my attention very often. It's not, you know, these are not teams that I'm sitting here preparing to talk about on Overdrive very often. And yet, for whatever reason, I would slot that series ahead of Ottawa, New York in terms of where my passion is.
Yeah, I guess
for
like,
watching.
I mean, I'm different because I do so many Senators games, but that series, it doesn't have the hatred or the biggest storylines coming out of it. That's why everything else kind of has a little bit something different. The St. Louis Blues the other day felt they got hosed by the refs, where you know there was a 5-on-5 basically. Everyone's jousting, and one guy gets the extra.
But I don't know why I would care that much about that series, even with that being the case. And it's not on the same level as Caps, Pens, Ducks, right. Oilers. Those are clearly the two series that I really want to track. But there's no reason, rhyme or reason for Ottawa not to be ahead of St. Louis and Nashville. But it feels that way to me. Obviously, a lot of people are focused on the Capitals today and Alex Ovechkin. And he floated around for the most part last night.
Even a saving grace. The only thing that was somewhat upstanding is that he owned it. Like there was no excuses or pointing fingers. He said, "I was bad, and I needed to be better."
Do you expect him to be better? That's the thing.
I do. I don't know why, but I've expected more from him.
I don't. That's the thing about Ovechkin. That's what it's come to at this point.
Right.
And I understand it's. Intangibles are a very difficult thing to talk about because you can't quantify it. You can't look at the sheet. Again, he's got 4 points in four games.
Right.
It's not as if the points aren't there. But
impact.
But impact. It has gotten to a point with Alex Ovechkin where in the playoffs or in the biggest moments, including the Olympics, we've seen countless opportunities of that, I just don't expect him to rise to the moment and absolutely dominate.
Well,
and I don't think you can argue against his playoff reputation anymore. During the regular season, the guy is an absolute wonder. He's one of the great goal scorers of all time. He's one of the great players of all time.
Right.
But last night's an example, man. That's a must win. You're down 2-1 in Pittsburgh, but Sid's not playing. Yeah. And Ovechkin performs the way he performed last night? That was brutal.
You had two captains at two ends of the spectrum. Getzlaff and Ovechkin.
And Ovi needed a Getzlaff night.
Well, you know who needs a couple Getzlaff nights is the Raptors.
Well, DeMar DeRozan is in a very similar position because his playoff reputation, he's got to own it right now.
Right.
He's been way too inconsistent over the past 4 years. And last night, I was getting frustrated. I was getting...
Are you yelling at the TV?
Well, I was kind of disappointed. And I was thinking to myself, DeMar... Like, in the third quarter, he had 1 point going into the second half. That was the story. I mean, that was the story. And he was not even seeking the ball. He didn't want the ball. He wasn't sitting there saying, give it to me and I will create. He wanted nothing to do it. He had checked out. And ultimately, you know, we can talk about the greatness of LeBron. We can talk about certain adjustments that can be made and that has to be made and the fact that you're coming home and all that kind of stuff. If DeMar DeRozan is going to give you 5 points, they're out in four.
Yeah.
Especially if Lowry's injured. Let's bring in our TSN Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg. I noticed that all night, Josh, but especially in the third quarter where I thought DeMar checked out, quite frankly. I didn't even think he was trying to break through double coverage. What did you make of his night, and do you really expect him to pick it up going into game three tomorrow night?
The body language, to your point, guys, was not good. He was not aggressive as he usually is, even without the ball going through the basket, and sometimes it doesn't. He wasn't doing all those other things that he did in the Milwaukee series to make an impact on the game, things that I think have been part of the evolution of his game, moving the ball, making plays for other guys. We didn't see any of that last night. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. It was probably the worst game I've seen him play since becoming an all-star in this league, and I'm confused by it, to be honest with you, because we saw a similar type of game three against Milwaukee. He promised he'd bounce back, and I thought he did. From game four on, I thought he was the biggest reason why the Raptors were able to win that first round series. He overcame what the Bucks were doing defensively to trap him and to take him out of his comfort zone. I don't see a reason why this Cavaliers defense should be doing anything to DeMar that he's not familiar with. I mean, granted, the Cavs have been excellent here through two games. They've clearly flipped that switch that people were wondering whether or not they'd flip, and the fact that they're now competent on the defensive end after struggling for 3 or 4 months, it proves that they flipped that switch. But even still, defensively at their best, they're still not what the Bucks were. They're not as long, not as athletic. So I don't know how to explain it exactly, but especially if there's no Kyle Lowry in the lineup tomorrow, DeMar DeRozan needs to be better. He needs to be much better.
Josh, you were joking on Twitter, I believe, saying you're going to talk with us at 6:05 to lavish the Raptors with praise, probably.
Could be a short segment if that's what we're doing.
Is there anything positive? Like you've seen the games, you've been around the guys, is there anything that you could say, all right, well, coming back into their own building, they could focus on this to draw some positivity out of it?
The lone bright spot, Jamie, for me in this series so far has been Kyle Lowry. And that's not a good thing now that he is highly questionable for tomorrow. But going into this series, I had said the Raptors' chance at winning this thing, or at least competing, their best chance is if Kyle Lowry is back to being the old Kyle Lowry, both physically and in terms of his actual performance. I think he's been the best player for the Raptors through two games. His shot is falling. He's making plays. He's getting to the rim. And then he goes down. And I think DeMar DeRozan said it best today. It seems like when it rains, it pours. We know that Lowry's a fierce competitor. If he's cleared, if he's able to go, I imagine he'll do everything to do so. But I'll tell you, the vibe in practice today surrounding Lowry's health was not good. I mean, sort of ominous, guys talking about preparing to play without him. It sounds like, as I said, he is highly questionable. And without Lowry, I don't see how the Raptors are able to fight back in this thing.
Well, I'm with you. I mean, ultimately, Kyle is the engine of the team. I think he's done his part for the most part through two games. He just hasn't been granted enough help. And it's a situation where if you look at what is happening with this team through two games and the conversation revolving around it and the fact that what is hanging over Lowry and the Raptors is that he's going to opt out of his contract, it's almost a situation where if he doesn't play, you might be looking into the future, Josh. Like, I am quite curious to find out how this is all going to play out. If they get swept or lose in five, they're not going to beat Cleveland. They're not beating them for the next five games. Last night was a must-win. But I have to believe that Ujiri is looking at what Cleveland has done here and looking at what they're more than likely going to do for the next year or two and has to be considering what he plans on doing with Kyle Lowry. Like, do you give him a five-year max contract if you're just going to run into the inevitable train that is Cleveland every single year?
Well, that's just it. I mean, the result is the same here after two games as it was last year, but I think the feeling this time around is very different because the expectations are. Last year, by the time they ran into Cleveland, they had pretty much exceeded, if not at least met, all expectations. They were sort of playing with house money, and the fact that they were even able to have that experience of sparring with the soon-to-be NBA champions was supposed to be an invaluable thing. But everything this organization has done over the last year has been with this matchup in mind. They believed that they were built for this series, not necessarily to win this series, but to compete. Now they're down 2-0, and that's not entirely surprising. I mean, the Cavaliers are the favorites, and the favorites are supposed to win the first two games at home. But if you're not going to win, I think at this point in the Raptors' process, it matters how you lose. And the fact that they haven't been competitive, the fact that they've shown no fight, no reason right now for Masai Ujiri to look at this and say, I can see some progress in the right direction, is a concern. And unless they find a way to turn things around in a hurry, perhaps without their starting point guard tomorrow, that's going to make for an interesting offseason.
Thank you, buddy. We'll see where it all goes tomorrow night. You can hear the game right here on TSN 1050. We're looking forward to it. Thanks, man.
All right, talk to you guys soon.
Josh Leuenberger, Raptors reporter. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be hanging over this team. That Lowry's going to opt out. He's 31 years old. I believe he's the same age as LeBron.
Right.
And but at this point, I mean, would you not put a mortgage payment on Cleveland back in the NBA Finals next season?
Absolutely. I've talked to you about Philip Rivers a lot. It's like, man, we're going to pay you like a number one guy, but do you really have a chance against...
And that, that's the,
like it would be so frustrating.
It's just
man.
Saying that this core isn't good enough to compete against
one team, though. That that is what is frustrating. It's the Jordan Bulls all over again. Like they can beat Boston
pretty much
in a series. They could beat Washington in a series. Any other team in the East, I would say they would either be favored or it's a coin flip series. But you run into LeBron and his team, and they're just going to keep spending money, and they're going to get guys on the cheap that want to go there to win a title.
Right, but the bigger story will be the year that LeBron gets hurt or the year that LeBron isn't good, like has an off season or something.
He's a freak, though, Noodles. That doesn't happen. He's 31 years old. I believe he's in his 14th season, and he is still, without question, the best player in the game. Like, what he has done here is proof, again, of how irrelevant the regular season is. All we did was talk about Westbrook and, hey, look at James Harden. None of them are close to LeBron. They're not. There isn't another guy in pro sports who has a bigger impact on the biggest games than LeBron James.
And a lot of people toss that out. They're like, there's new people every year. It's the fresh idea. It's the new guy. But LeBron could literally be the MVP every year.
There isn't. If you're building a team for one game, there isn't a basketball mind on earth that would take anyone but LeBron.
Right. Well, but that's the thing. He continues. I just, at some point, like something's going to give. Like,
I hear you,
right.
Noodles, like, but it might be age, which could be 4 or 5 years down the road. I'm fearful that what you're dealing with is, and quite frankly, the results would indicate this is exactly what it is. It's like being another team in the AFC East over the past 15 years.
Right.
You're the Bills, the Dolphins, or the Jets. You're hoping to win a wild card spot. Because you're not beating the Patriots. Until Brady retires, you're not beating the Patriots. Yeah. So what I think has to happen, and I think they're finally figuring this out in Buffalo, is stop fighting to be 10-6. Stop fighting to maybe be a wild card team. Blow it up. Be awful for the next 2 years. Let Brady age. And then when he's done, then it's your time to take over. And I honestly think you're in the same situation in the East in the NBA.
Yeah,
you might have to grind for 2 or 3 years while LeBron continues to go to the finals every single year, because I think he's going to go 8, 9, 10 years in a row. But then when
crazy?
He's finally done, that's when it's got to be your time. That's kind of where they're at.
I know.
It's incredibly crazy. Frustrating, but you got to give it up to LeBron James. I mean, the guy, like, imagine hating on this guy. I was thinking about that today.
But people
you talk about sports regret. In 30 years, if you didn't take advantage of watching this guy play and love every second of it, you're going to regret that. If you're a LeBron hater, in 20 years, you're going to wake up and say, what the hell was I thinking? Why didn't I
feel
just...
the same way about Tiger Woods. Watching Tiger Woods through that stretch of golf, it was the most awesome television I've ever seen.
Bask in it. Bob and Duffy will join us in studio. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, so we got a couple of podcast guys in here, and we're going to go full-out car salesman. What do we have to do to put you guys into a podcast war? Bob McKenzie and James Duffy in here.
We've already had that.
Yeah, I would not win that. It's clear from the beginning. Put it this way. My third episode of the podcast, I was desperate to get... I got Bob on the podcast, and it's still, like, got twice as many hits as any other podcast I've done, so I conceded defeat at that point. And now I'll have to beg him every time I need a boost, the Bobby boost, as he calls it.
But now you're doing one every week, so you're making me look bad.
You should have.
I did it every other week. I don't have guests. I have no production value. It's me in my pajamas.
But that's what works.
You're
basically it.
I can't survive without the production value.
And that right? Jimmy's got a lot of bells and whistles. He's got Puffy.
Smoking mirrors.
Yeah,
he's
got smoking Puffy. Mirrors.
Puffy should be on the panel. He's like... Yeah. He's ready to move up. He's the star of the podcast. No offense, Jamie, but
no, I agree.
Puffy
with that.
Is
he has
I
his
he's
hypotheticals.
A star.
That's what it is. He's got his hypotheticals. But you should have O on the pod.
I don't.
You can't swear on your podcast, can you?
Yeah, you
technically
can.
You can.
I'm not doing that.
Tell a few stories.
Unless there's a check involved, he's already made that clear.
Very clear.
You tell a few stories.
I'm not putting more money in those gentlemen's pockets.
We're not getting any money for it.
I think that's a lie.
The love of the podcast.
I really think that's a lie.
You almost,
if I know both of you, you wouldn't do this garbage for free.
You don't know us well enough?
You don't know us very well.
You almost ventured into your Peter LaViolette imitation there when you... That's a lie.
Yeah.
That's not the truth.
That is.
I love Lavi.
Did you see the fist pump the other day?
Did you see that? I thought it was brilliant.
That was WWE. He went back and then forward.
Shouldn't that happen more? Like, why don't coaches do that more?
Somebody said that he was like stealing Rennie Rancourt's.
He did the double fist bump.
The funny thing is, on the first goal he did that, and then the second goal he was like
stone face.
The stone face, nothing. It went like from one extreme to the other. It was awesome.
Yeah, maybe he probably realized that he'd done it and that it might be on camera and that he hates it.
When Lavi first got traded to Carolina, I was in an awful slump. And the first game behind the bench, Ronnie Francis passed me this overtime, like one-timer, and I buried it. And I came off the ice, and Lavi just gave me this greatest hug, and he was like, I knew it. He goes, you're awesome. You're a goal scorer. And that was like the only.
That was the end of the.
The next day, he was like, "Can you get on the scale?" And I was like, "I don't know if I want to do that." And then we had one moment together.
But you had one.
Yeah, we had one. We had our moment.
I would call Chris Pronger and say, "Lavi is going to have an aneurysm behind the bench because have you seen? Like, he gets so worked up and screaming at everyone and screaming at the coach, and he's got the vein popping out of his head." And
he was great on the panel. We loved him.
He's one of those guys that tries to maintain the in control look, but you can tell it's not. And one of the more uncomfortable yet fascinating meetings in my career was in our room when Lavi was on the panel. And Dregs reported that day that he'd gotten the job with the Flyers, or was about to. And Dregs was about to report it on our show. And Dregs had got it from some other source.
It wasn't Lavi, I can tell you that.
And Lavi wanted no part of him reporting that because he was going to have to sit there on the panel. And I can't do the imitation like Jeff does, but it was Dregs. This is very uncomfortable for me. As soon as you say this, everyone will think that I've given it to you. That's not the case. I don't want you to report this. Drake's like, well, sorry, I'm reporting it. That's my job. I do not like this. I do not like this idea. Do not report this. And it went back and forth for about 5 minutes. Well, it was fantastic.
So what ended up happening?
So how did he? Dregs got
the information. Reported it, and I had to ask Lavi about it, and Lavi said, "I'm not going to comment on this right now. Your journalists do your job. I'll do mine." And the next day, he was named the head coach.
I mean, do you give him credit for following through on the job? I would have quit. Why would you stick around for the panel? I'd be out of there if you had a job.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding. You should have just left.
Well, why'd he stick around?
Good on him to stay. That's a great question.
He's probably afraid of the quizmaster too.
That's true. The two-way street. Weren't you were fishing for a freebie the other night, weren't you? A Ryan Ellis jersey on Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want a Ryan. He's my new favorite player in the league. I love the guy.
Who did you send a note to? Did you send a note to?
I just said Preds. Lavi doesn't like me, but if you can hook me up, get me a jersey. But they never responded.
They didn't. I missed that part in journalism school.
Where you ask for free stuff.
Fishing for free stuff on Twitter.
You guys are such losers. I know the playoffs are getting long, and I just, no, I'm not having it.
Sick of these.
We're not even through the second round.
Sick of you guys. You
guys are losers. Halfway through the second round.
Shove your podcasts up your ass.
It does feel like Ryan Ellis is getting a lot of love, though.
He should.
He's a good player, man.
He is good.
What was funny was when he was so great in the World Juniors, and he was kind of the power play specialist, and then when he got to the league, it looked like, he's never going to be a player. He's too small, and maybe he'll be a power play guy, but that's about it. And suddenly he's something.
Yeah, and he was really frustrated in the early going with Nashville that he wasn't getting as many minutes and as much opportunity as he would like. But David Poile always said, "No, you know what? We're big on you. We think you're going to do great things." But they had their own timetable for it. It was probably frustrating for a while, but now you're seeing it.
He's another guy too that, remember, he looked, even when he was 26, he still looked 16. Yeah. And so now that would he be now, 28, 29?
He's 26, I think.
Okay, so maybe when, let me take that back. When he was 23, he still looked like he was 16, but that beard has helped him more than
I think
any
gross
other
beard. Look There's like a man. There's a lot of gross beards out there now. Like, it's the Eves, Patrick Eves, like, that's a disgusting beard.
Well,
too.
Thornton has the worst one. Joe Thornton, he looks like the guy that owns Idomo. Remember that guy that used to, like, he grew the beard out ever since he bought the store or whatever?
Yeah.
What do the wives and girlfriends think of the beard?
I don't know.
I mean, I know some ladies like, maybe you can get some of your lady listeners to tweet in. I know some women like the facial hair, I get it. But that beard like that, wouldn't that disgust you?
I think it's a must-marry situation. I think you got to be married. Like, I don't know too many single guys walking around with beards like that. But even, I think it cuts
even if
out.
You're married, so you're in the sheets, romantic night, and all that. There's stuff going out of there. There's
I hear you, man.
Chicken wings dangling out from the bottom.
It's a terrible look. I don't get it. But we were talking about the cap situation in Nashville, and Ryan Ellis is at $2.5 million for the next two. Ekholm's at, I believe, a 3.75 cap hit for the next four or five, and Yossi's at a $4 million cap. I mean, that's three guys for under $14, $15 million, and that's the best top four in the league right now, I would say.
Yeah,
we're
and then
close
you got
to
PK at, what, 9.5?
Right, but that doesn't really matter if you're only paying these guys that kind of money.
No, it averages out very well.
I mean, they're stacked in Nashville on the back end.
So that would all add up to would that all add up to less than PK then? 4, 3?
No, it's 4, 3.7 and 2.5.
Pretty close though, right?
Yeah, it's 11 million and it's and PK's 9. So they're spending $20 million on four quality defensemen.
Right.
That'll
an
work.
Average of four.
That'll work.
Not bad.
What did you guys make of the officiating last night in the Edmonton Anaheim game?
I thought that they were all 50-50 calls, but to have three of them go against you
that's unusual.
Is unfortunate. Yeah. Like, just in the pure math of things that they should have gotten. Like, I really thought the goal interference was,
You thought that was 50-50? I can't believe that wasn't goalie interference.
I thought that was automatic goalie
interference. Bob Gogue, because we just had this talk.
If you're asking me, would I have called goalie interference, the answer is yes. Do I understand how you could rationalize it based on the rule and the call that he made on the ice? Absolutely. I mean, his pad's outside the crease. His blocker's outside the crease. Corey Perry is as entitled to that area outside the crease as Talbot is. Referee says it's incidental contact, which is to suggest that Corey Perry's just going to the front of the net to screen the goalie. And in the old days, that's what it would have been. Without video review for coaches' challenge, there's... In my mind, 5 years ago, there's not a referee in the National Hockey League that would have called that goalie interference. But we got a new universe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the new standards are based on, was the goalie touched at all? And where was he hit? And But 5 years ago, that's not even when Noodles played, that's not even close to being considered goalie interference. But the standards have changed.
The problem is just the way it worked. I mean, the offside call, I hate that. I like those goals to count because I hate that. We all hate that offside review, but it was offside. And the fact that you couldn't appeal that because you'd lost it on the goal.
Some people have suggested that you should be able to mount another coach's challenge, have as many coaches' challenge as you want. But if you're wrong, it's a delay of game penalty.
Yeah, see, so, I would do that.
So you get to... You get to go to the well again, but there's now a real risk involved, not just losing your timeout. In a playoff game, you're going to put yourself down.
If you call in an illegal stick and it's not illegal, it's a two-minute penalty.
Exactly.
So why wouldn't you? Like, there's got to be some consistency. And I think, you know, the rules are – they've implemented these new rules as a review. Like, you can tweak them. You can – they can be better. They can be better in year five than they were in year one. And that's I hope that it evolves to a point where you get some language where it's somewhat cut and dry. This is what scares you. 50-50. So there's five guys here. You said 50-50. Bob, you said it would be a goal or not a goal. I thought it was interference, but not because I'm a goalie hugger. Just because I'm looking at where the puck went and Talbot's going that way and he can't make the save because of Perry there. And... you know, whether he's in the crease or out of the crease, Talbot really hadn't moved. He was set, and the player has to find some way. He's got to find some ice, too, but it was in an incidental contact. I 100% agree with
it. I think the problem is that as a fan, you have no idea, and I don't think that's ever good for business.
But here's the thing. When should we have a clue? Because it's a subjective thing. It's referees. It's not... The hilarious thing to me is that they brought video review and coaches challenge in, and the objective as opposed to the subjective one, offside versus goalie interference, has caused more controversy than the subjective one. All they're saying on goalie interference for coaches challenge is the referee's going to check his homework. He's going to double check it to make sure don't want to. He's still, it's an opinion. It's not hard and fast. It's never hard and fast. It never has been. People think it is because everybody thinks their opinion is the one that counts. Yeah. And it's subjective.
Right. But if you're going to walk away from it feeling as if they get it right or wrong 50% of the time, why waste the time with the review at all?
Well,
that's
my
point.
I would say, and I was one of those guys, and probably James was too, when they brought in the coaches. I'm sure, bring it in. Why not? We've got the technology. Let's get it right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's get it right more than we get it wrong. And let's use the technology.
Yeah.
Guess what? The more technology you have, the harder it becomes to get it right, especially on the offside. The problem, if you had only one camera angle, that would be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
If you just had one camera angle from the stands, you look at it and say, I can't tell. Yeah. Oh, you know what? We don't have one. We got 9 camera angles. So now you start going down the list. And guess what? We got to 8, and they said, now we need a 9th camera. Let's put one in the boards because this will tell us for sure that it's the thing. And now it just, all it means is it takes longer to figure out that it's still inconclusive.
Yeah.
I hate the whole thing.
I hate it.
I've gone from, as I said, let's get it right. Let's use our technology. Why would we be in the dark ages? To, you know what? I'd rather just be wrong, and the Matt Duchene 9-foot offside, I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take it rather than all these reviews and all the other BS that goes with it.
I don't know that there's an – I wish there was some sort of a lawyer could come up with a proper legal wording where you could say that the offside had to be visible to the naked eye at full speed or something. And,
right.
And just to say that, okay, we're going to still protect ourselves from the Duchene calls, but anything that's within a – 6 inches or a foot. Now, I realize how hard that is to determine, but someone's got to be more clever than I to come up with a wording where you could say, look, we're going to get the obvious ones, but we're going to screw all the ones that are close.
But that's a good call because that's the protocol. Like, I get frustrated. I sit with you guys, I sit in, TH2N. You look at a big hit, you don't say, oh, it's a big hit. You're like,
is it suspendable?
Suspendable, head is contact. Like you're in your mind, you're going through a roll call of like how this is going to unfold. And that's the frustrating part. But at least
we did it with the Crosby one.
Yeah. I mean, we had to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still arguments on either side.
Oh,
and it will be.
The great thing about nobody will be able to convince anybody otherwise. So if you feel one way, you've seen the video. But we know this. People used to say all the time, but when they talked about bringing video review in, James and I used to use the example. Well, you know what? James and I and 2 other guys sat on a panel for years and years and years, and we both look at the exact same replay, and I can't tell you how many times 2 guys saw it one way and 2 guys saw it the other way, and that's when I knew that it's never unanimous.
Well, and a lot of times, too, we don't factor in where the refs are actually positioned, and the Bonino or the Oshie call last night was a perfect example. We had the ability afterwards.
Fault.
He was standing behind him. It looked like a high stick from his vantage point.
And Bonino sold it.
He sold it. And if he doesn't make that, you've got Carey Fraser all over again. If he doesn't make the call and Bonino turns around and his face is bloody and Oshie scores the tire, people are yelling at the ref.
The funniest thing about that all was the TJ Oshie's reaction. He fell on a sword after the game. He said, that's my fault.
Shouldn't have my stick
I can't put my stick up in that general vicinity because Bonino, he didn't even criticize Bonino for faking and embellishing.
Yeah. What he basically said was,
but he said basically when the stick gets up that close, your natural reaction is to throw your head back to avoid being hit in the face. So,
How much of last night for you guys, just watching the game, analyzing the game, how much of it did you walk away saying, I got to talk about Ovechkin? That was a storyline for me. I thought he just floated around all night, to be honest, and this is a guy with a playoff reputation that isn't necessarily a gold standard.
I agreed with everything O said on our show last night, and he was really harsh. I've defended him a lot of playoffs because I think
me too.
Early in his career, he had some weak playoffs, and then he went on a string where they would get knocked out, but he was their best player every year. And I thought that he did not deserve the reputation that he had. But when you watch something like that last night with everything on the line, you can't apologize for it.
See, I think the bigger target, and I didn't. I wasn't in last night, but I didn't see your hits.
Floater.
For me, the bigger target's Backstrom.
Yeah.
Because I got to be honest with you, and I said it when we covered the series and we were down.
Yeah, you and Ray have both said.
He's the better player than Ovechkin. Like, based on this past, I'm not talking career. This past season, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Nick Backstrom was one of the best players in the National Hockey League. He was, he's a top 5 skater in the National Hockey League, forward anyways, this year. And I found he was even more invisible than Ovechkin last night.
Yeah.
Well, is this, I mean, this will be the ultimate choke job. It'll be considered that way. If you've got Crosby out, you've got Letang out, you've got Matt Murray out. Now, Fleury has been brilliant, so it's not as if it's some no-name
Sheary's
stepping
out.
Up.
Right.
Sheary's out. Is this potentially blow-up material?
Yeah, like, but what does blow-up mean? Does it mean get rid of Backstrom or Ovechkin? Because I don't think there's any other definition. Like, we're going to blow it up and we're going to...
Yeah.
Well, get rid of,
if like Kuznetsov and Carlson were on deck to be traded, would that be considered a blow up? I don't know. Like, would, if we walked out of the draft weekend or free agency, so wow, they traded Carlson, they traded Kuznetsov, they're going to let Oshie walk, Williams walk. Like, would that be considered a blow up, or is it Ovechkin and Backstrom?
There's going to be significant changes with all the guys they have up and their salary cap implications anyway. But I always feel like in the moment, we always feel like it's going to be a blow up, and it never, it hardly ever
hard to
happens
blow things
in
up
hockey.
In a salary cap world.
Right.
And so I bet you Trotz is back, although that'll be an interesting one, but I bet you he's back. I bet you Ovi's back. I bet you Backstrom's back, and it's all the, like you say, one of those secondary pieces goes.
They've been doing that for the last number of years, mm-hmm. and we're not burying them yet. They've still got a ways to go here. But
Detroit, if you remember, they had to wait a long time to get it right.
What?
Those teams with Steve Yzerman.
Well, yeah, Yzerman, the book on Yzerman, we can't win with this guy. That's what they were saying in Detroit. Yeah.
We can't
win with this guy.
I do admit that it's a bit of a choke job, but I just think the Pens are a horrible matchup for them.
Yep.
And in some ways, look, the shots, what were the shots last night? 38-18 or something. It's not like the Capitals didn't show up.
Yeah.
You're right about Backstrom and Ovi, but they didn't play that poorly. Their goalie hasn't been great. The other goalie's been better. And
what was Pedro Martinez's classic line when he lost to the Yankees? The pitcher?
What did he say?
Say, like, they're my daddy, or you're my
who's your daddy?
Yeah, who's your daddy after?
Right. Like, that could be
the
situation.
He's like, I can't beat these guys.
Where this is just the one team, and maybe if the alignment was different, it wasn't divisional, and Pittsburgh got knocked out by the Rangers or something, the Caps would win the Cup. Now, that's a sorry excuse. You have to beat teams, but this is just their, this might just be their nemesis, just a horrible matchup.
So now let me ask you this then. So let's say they lose, and then they say, we're going to blow it up, and by our definition, blow it up, we're going to trade Ovechkin. What do you think you're getting for Ovechkin at this age with that contract? And does Ovechkin say, yeah, you know what, I don't want to be traded.
I'm good.
I think I'll do a Kovalchuk.
That's a good question.
I'll do a Kovalchuk. So now, are you blew it up and you got nothing coming back, and suddenly now we're to his 30 or 40 goals, depending if he has a break, you know, he's still got another big year left in him.
I think they'd be quite content to just leave it be. He's the face of the franchise. Give him a couple more years, and there's nothing you can really do. You just keep trying to mix around the pieces.
And that's what San Jose did all those years of quote-unquote failure. They played more playoff series over a 5 or 6 year period than almost any team in the National Hockey League, but they never got to the big dance. You got to get rid of Thornton, you got to get rid of Marlowe, you got to get rid of this guy, you got to get rid of that guy. Never got rid of them. And they got back to the dance. They got to the dance finally last year. They didn't win it.
This is a stretch, Hayes, but I think there's a little bit, what he's saying there reminds me of the Raptors. Like, everybody's going to say blow up the Raptors if they go in four here, mm-hmm. but it's just the Cavs. Nobody else has beaten the Cavs, and I wish the Raptors could have played the Celtics or the Wizards, mm-hmm. and then you would have been a better judge of their season if they'd made it progress or not. Because are you just going to blow it up? You're not going to beat the Cavs. If you start rebuilding now, there's no guarantee in 5 years you're going to be back. So I think you almost have to be satisfied with trying to be the second or third best team in the conference.
I think it's a very appropriate analogy, and I think you're probably right. If you're the owner of the team, if you're in the marketing department, if you're in sales, you're sitting there and you're saying, what's the alternative? That we're awful for years? I mean, Washington, ultimately, you want to get through, you want to win a Stanley Cup, but they're still selling tickets, they're selling jerseys, they're winning games during the regular season, they're making it to the playoffs.
You're getting dates, which are worth $3 or $4 million a date.
Yeah,
all that stuff matters, right?
Just a matter of whether or not you can retool and think you can take that next step.
This is not a cap-friendly playoff format.
No kidding.
No.
Back-to-back years against the Penguins.
No kidding. But this is the one, like, Sid's out. Letang is out.
Yeah, this
you know,
is
like,
an
this
opportunity.
This is the one where you got to take advantage. All right, boys. We'll catch you guys on the podcast. We're looking forward
which one
to
would
it.
You listen to first?
Neither.
I don't blame you.
Interesting.
Would you ever come on mine for a non-paying opportunity?
For $1,000, I will.
I gave Rod Smith a head cover for coming on yesterday.
A golf head cover?
A Moose Light head cover.
A Moose Light. I would be insulted. $1,000, I'll come on.
$1,000.
Yeah.
Find that.
Is that a full hour appearance or one of these 15-minute windows?
2 hours if you want. Just that's my fee, $1,000.
You know how much Bob and I got for this segment?
I know you make $1.7 million a year at TSN, so.
Lisa LaFlamme.
Goes up every time we talk.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Right.
I'm still off by 500.
I don't have guests on my podcast, so screw off.
That's right.
There you go.
He's winging it. Bob McKenzie, James Duthie, 3 stars and best bets next. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the two NBA games tonight, I'm taking the home teams to cover and win. I think Washington ends up winning tonight over Boston, and Golden State will roll over Utah. Throw $20 down, you can score 40. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. He has one. What do you got?
What is it, LeVar Ball, whatever? Like, he come out with a shoe, and it's like $450.
$495.
What the, did you guys talk about it already?
We haven't brought it up, the big baller shoe company or whatever
like,
it is.
Like, is this guy a donkey or what?
Well, he comes from a donkey. Isn't his dad a
No, idiot? This is the dad.
Oh, yeah, the dad, LeVar, Lonzo's the kid, and he's going top three or top five. And I hope he turns into a really good player, tells his dad to take a lap, and then he goes, signs with Nike or Under Armour or something like
that. Nobody's going to buy big baller shoes.
Who's buying that shoe?
Nobody. For that kind of price, it's asinine. The kid hasn't even been drafted yet, and out of spite, the dad, forget him. All right, you guys ready quickly for the 3 stars?
Yes.
Overdrive, 3 stars of the day.
I'm going to do all three. Jamie McLennan, Jeff O'Neill tied for second, and the first star is Brian Hayes.
Wow.
Really?
What happened?
You were good today.
I felt okay.
Yeah, you carried us.
We got to throw Steph a shout out. It's her birthday.
Yeah, it's her birthday. No.
Third star for Steph.
Okay, third star. Third
star. Maybe your anti-star? No, we can't do that.
No, come on. Steph was outstanding today.
She was good. She left early, though. She's lazy.
She's off to Yorkdale for a dinner.
We need some Portuguese chicken tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah, let's work something out.
Don't we?
Yes. Friday, we need some birds up here.
Sounds
Make good. It happen.
Shoot
people.
Us a message. DM me Portuguese chicken. I'll pick it up.
I'll send a note. I'll send out the bat symbol. Yeah. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.